Hi, this is Hannes Finney with Storyworthy, obviously. And Christine and I want to thank you for all you've done to help our numbers shoot way up in the past 3 months. Keep telling your friends. Keep telling your enemies. Tell anyone that you know to keep listening to Storyworthy because it's worth it. It's worth it.
Hey, guess what? It's Jake Weissman, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I am once again alone. That's right, Hannes Finney is ill today, as he was last week when you heard the show. How do I know that Hannes is going to be ill for 3 weeks? Well, I'm recording 3 podcasts today. So there you have it. I am alone, bearing my soul. I stand before you, a woman. There you have it. But luckily, I do have some help tonight. Jake Weissman is here. Jake Weissman, he is a comedian, and I follow him on Twitter. And I only say that, Anthony Bench, I only say that because he's so funny on Twitter. He stands out of the pack. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you.
I mean, I follow, 600 people? This guy, Jake Weissman, he really stands out. You can follow him yourself, folks, at Jake. It's actually at Weissman Jake is what it is. Weissmanjake. Anyway, he's here tonight, and he brings forth the topic domestic violence. What's happening? That's not funny.
No, not at all.
Not as funny as we usually have. Depends on what you're punching. That's exactly right. But domestic violence, boy, you guys, this is a huge topic. But we're gonna tackle it. Is what we're gonna do. Domestic violence is a big word. It could be family violence, dating abuse, spousal abuse, battering, intimate partner violence. That's a new word for us. IPV, intimate partner violence. And of course, it's a pattern of behavior which involves the abuse of one partner against another in an intimate relationship, such as marriage, cohabitation, or dating, or within the family. So that's your domestic violence right there. This is a huge topic. Of course, this involves physical aggression or assault, right? Like hitting, kicking, biting, shoving, restraining, slapping, throwing objects. Anthony, this is all bad. Or threats, sexual abuse, controlling, domineering. I think the whole thing of domestic violence is about control. As I understand, I think alcohol consumption, of course, mental illness. This can add to the whole thing, and of course, here in America, domestic violence is heavily frowned upon. Let's just put it that way, which is good, but that varies by country. And I was looking into it, and in many developing countries, this is not the case. For instance, in the United Arab Emirates Supreme Court, they ruled that a man does have the right to physically discipline his wife and children as long as he does not leave physical marks. That's 2010, man. That's like 4 years ago. According to a UNICEF survey, the percentage of women aged 15 to 49 who think that a husband is justified in hitting or beating his wife under certain circumstances. Like, well, first of all, what could be that circumstance? You didn't give me a sandwich? I mean, what are we talking about? For example, 90% of girls 15 to 49 think that's okay. In Jordan, 87% think it's okay. In Mali, 86%. Most of these are in Africa, right? Central African Republic, 80%. Refusing to submit to a husband's wishes is a common reason given for justification of violence in developing countries. For instance, 62.4% of women in Tajikistan justify wife beating if the wife goes out without telling the husband. 68% believe if she argues with him, and 47% believe if she refuses to have sex with him. Yikes. I'm happy to live in the USA, I'll say that. In some places, they have those honor killings. That's like another type of domestic abuse. Honor killings, acid attacks, and dowry violence. Have you ever heard that word, Anthony? Dowry violence?
I've heard the word dowry.
In parts of the world, such as South Asia, the custom of dowry is related to severe forms of violence, including murder. Bride burning is a form of domestic violence in which a bride is killed at home by her husband or her husband's family due to his dissatisfaction over the dowry provided by her family. Yikes. So basically, if they don't give a certain amount of money, they can kill you for not getting that. That sounds more like kidnapping. And, you know, holding them for ransom for a certain amount of money. That's a crazy thing. Dowry death refers to the phenomenon of women and girls being killed or committing suicide due to disputes regarding the dowry. So some of these girls are just like, fuck this shit, I'm checking out. They'd rather commit suicide. Also, in many cultures, victims of rape face severe violence, including honor killings from their families and relatives. So here, you get raped. That would be the first problem. Then your brother and his friends come after you because you've humiliated the family. Especially if the victim becomes pregnant, then that really puts the family to shame. Also, there is violence related to female virginity. Female virginity is the trigger of many forms of violence against women. Sex outside of marriage is illegal in many countries. Did you know that? I wonder if our guest tonight, Jake Wiseman, knows that it is illegal to have out-of-marriage sex in Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait, the Maldives, Morocco, Oman, Mauritania, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Sudan, and Yemen. All those places I just named, you cannot have sex. It is illegal out of wedlock. That's crazy.
I never want to go there.
I never want to go there either. I'll be honest with you. Where is Dubai? Isn't that in there?
Yeah.
I would like to go to Dubai for some reason. All right, domestic abuse. This is a heavy topic. Okay, one more type of domestic abuse we'll talk about is acid throwing. Acid throwing. This is also called an acid attack. It's defined as the act of throwing acid onto the body of a person with the intention of injuring or disfiguring them out of jealousy or revenge. This would be unfucking believable. Am I right, Anthony?
You're absolutely
so
correct.
Here you are, a woman.
It's inhumane.
You get out of your car. Some guy runs up to you with a jar of clear liquid, throws it on you, and you are disfigured, maimed for life because it's acid and it's eating away your flesh. All right, perpetrators of these acid attacks, they throw acid at their victims, usually their faces, burning them and damaging skin tissue, often exposing and sometimes dissolving the bones. So this acid is not just like taking away the top layer of your epidermis. This is going to your bones. The long-term consequences of these attacks include blindness, permanent scarring of the face and body. Now, these domestic disputes still take place often in Pakistan, Bangladesh, and in India, these attacks also happen in connection to the dowry murders. So again, it goes back to that dowry. I don't know. I think I'm happy to live right here in the USA. You know what I mean? However, that being said, there's plenty of domestic abuse. I haven't had that, and I think I'm pretty happy about that. All right, you guys. Hey, listen, if you'd like to support Storyworthy, and of course you do, then there's a couple of things you can do. Number one, head on over to storyworthypodcast.com, click on the donate button, and give us money. There. It's clean. It's fast. You did it. Thank you. You know, there are people that do that from time to time, Anthony. They give us a couple of bucks, 10 bucks, 20 bucks, and it actually really helps keep the train afloat is what it does.
They're good people.
They're good people out there. And also feel free to email us, folks. The email address is info@storyworthypodcast.com. And of course, you can always head over to iTunes and leave us a good review. Good reviews cost you nothing. This is free. Just like applause, it's all free. So folks, wherever you are, stay tuned because Jake Wiseman is on his way up. Next week on Storyworthy, we have comedian Wayne Fetterman.
And my topic is the Super Bowl.
That's next week on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Todd Glass and you are listening to Storyworthy, and I'm proud of you.
And we're back. I am here in the studio, Sideshow Network, with Jake Wiseman, my dear friend and co-host, Hannes Finney, still not present. He's not feeling well. He will be back next week. That I can tell you. He wishes he could be here, but he is achy. He is tired. It sounds like every other day, really, in the life of Hannes Finney. But anyway, so folks, please feel free to interject your own sarcastic remarks, witty banter. I will insult you if you're looking for that. And we're here right now with Jake Wiseman. You know, Jake Wiseman, he's a comedian here in Los Angeles, and he has a sketch group called Women of Comedy. The website is womencomedy.com. Okay, here's four guys in a sketch group. There are no women in the sketch group. So womencomedy.com with no women. But they're very, very funny. I'll say that. They have a lot of sketches online, and they're fast and they're quick, and they hit it and they quit it, and they get a couple of laughs, and then they're done, right? So there's no fluff. There's no extra anything. It's just funny is what it is. They're frequently seen on Funny or Die. And you can follow Jake on Twitter, at WisemanJake, or you can follow his sketch comedy group, at Women Comedy. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, please put your hands together for Jake Wiseman.
Hi, everyone. So the story I'm going to tell happened when I was a sophomore in college. I won't name the college. I'm going to try to keep most of the names kind of anonymous because of the content of the story. But I went to college somewhere in the South, and I'm from the North. And I don't even know why I said that. But anyway, the point is sophomore year, I had a very interesting year. One of the reasons why I had an interesting year is I lived in kind of a terrible dormitory with my good friend who was my roommate. And we lived next to this guy whose name was Carl. That's the only real name I'm going to use. But basically, he was so weird. He was a very handsome, brooding guy, very big guy. We lived in a very terrible dorm. And we started to call him Killer Carl. And the reason why we called him Killer Carl in a joking way is because he seemed to get very drunk and angry a lot. Now, we had no proof of it, but he would obviously be drunk when we'd see him in the hallway. He literally lit. We shared a wall with him. And he would just seem to be like a big, brooding, scary guy. And he had this beautiful girlfriend. I mean, stunningly beautiful. Like I was like, oh, wow, you're difficult to look at. Like, you look angelic. And they would always hang out in there. And it, like, sometimes at 2 or 3 in the morning, we'd hear like weird yelling, or we thought we'd hear bottles breaking. But we didn't know what was going on, so we joked about it between us. And we called him Killer Carl. Oh, Killer Carl's at it again, all that stuff. We really had no idea what was going on. The other thing that happened that year that was really interesting in my life was I had a terrible breakup. I had a breakup. I was dating a woman who I'm Jewish. I'm also an atheist. I don't care about religion, but I am born Jewish. And I was dating a very Christian woman, and I had never really met any Christians before I moved to the South. And we had a very bad breakup, partially because of religion, and partially she had some things going on. I'm not just calling her crazy, but she was acting pretty wild. And there was a point where she cheated on me, and I caught her. She cheated on me with a guy who wore a hemp necklace of the Pope to his work as a Starbucks barista, and he believed the world was ending in 2000, but she met him in 2001. So it was like a weird thing where I was like, oh, the opposite of me is what women want. I felt very bad. I felt very frustrated at women in general. I was too immature to understand it was just one person. So that happened as well. It was a very, very bad breakup. There's some other stuff that happened that really traumatized me, but it was very intense. Our breakup was so bad that she ended up moving off campus because she didn't want to see me around, because it was such a traumatic thing when I ended it after I caught her cheating. So for me to get over the breakup, what I did was I got very involved in school activities. One of the things I got very involved in was putting on this concert. This big end of year concert, you had to book a ton of different bands, and it was like the end of the year. So you had to spend the end of your year really like helping put in this concert for students, and like huge bands would come in, and it was an exhausting thing, but I loved it, and it really helped like distract me from all the pain I was feeling emotionally. So one of the nights of that concert, after it was done, so like 2 or 3 in the morning, I was exhausted. I mean, I got no sleep. You get no sleep that whole week. I came back to my room, and my roommate was drunk as hell. He would like to get drunk and watch Big Lebowski all the time. It was pretty much a nightly thing, but this was one of the drunkest I've ever seen him. He fell asleep with laundry covering his face and the remote in his hand. And I was like, are you kidding me? Are you this drunk again? So like 2 or 3 in the morning, all I want to do is sleep. I have to be up at 8 in the morning. I like pick him up somehow and eventually get him on the top bunk. I just somehow got him on the top bunk, but he was blasted drunk. I'm about to fall asleep. I'm just like, oh, sweet sleep, come take me over, you know, some Shakespearean thing. At that, like right before I'm about to fall asleep, and I'm just so tired, and I have to wake up in like 4 hours, I hear like what I think is like a little knock on the door. And I was like, there's no way that's a knock on the door. It's just like an illusion or something. I don't know what I'm hearing. So I'm just like, whatever. Okay, focus, Jake. Fall asleep. And you hear a little, another knock on the door. And again, I think it's ridiculous. Then I hear a bigger knock on the door. And I'm like, who the fuck is knocking on my door at 3 or 4 in the morning, whatever time it is right now? I don't even know. And I decide to let it go. And then I hear like, hello? And so I go to the door. I'm like in boxers. I'm like a Mickey Mouse. I had this oversized Mickey Mouse shirt that I wore as pajamas. I open the door and I see Killer Carl's girlfriend completely naked at my door, covering her private parts with her hands. She looked like a fallen angel. She really did. Like it was like it was an all male floor that we were on, and she was completely naked and like shivering. And it was 4 a.m. So I like pulled her in. I got my comforter and I gave it to her and I just put her on the bed. I got pajamas. I put them on her and we sort of just sat there silently for a while. And after about 30 minutes of her just like whimpering and crying, I was like, what? I hate to ask this, but what's going on? And also, before you answer, I think I have some idea of what's going on. Does this have something to do with your boyfriend? And she said, yes. And she said what had happened was they were having sex in the middle of the night, and he was very drunk, and he got mad at her, and he picked her up, placed her outside the room, locked the door. So she was naked outside in an all-boy hall in the middle of the night, and she, you know, because we lived next door to each other, she would see me a lot. We never really had a conversation. We all knew who each other were. It's the same floor. And so she just thought, oh, he seems nice. I'll just knock on their door, you know? And so eventually, after about 30 minutes of explaining what happened, trying to like get what's going on, I got the courage to ask her if he hit her. Because, you know, we had always joked about him being Killer Carl, but at this point I'm like, well, I think we were onto something. I think we were joking about something we probably shouldn't have been joking about. And she basically is like, yeah, he does hit me a lot. And what he would do, she explained, and she showed me, she picked up like her legs up like the top of her thighs. He would hit her on the top of her thighs a lot because that is the most easily hideable part of the body. I'd heard crazy stuff like this in like sociology class, but I never thought this was actually something put in practice. He would just hit her on parts of her body or abuse her mentally, but also physically. And I saw these black and blue marks on the parts of her body and just parts that were easily hideable by clothes. So at that point, I realized, oh, I got to get her off campus. She's in danger. When this guy wakes up, he's going to come and try to kill her. This is an insane thing. This is like actual domestic abuse. I lived such a privileged life. I never actually thought that existed. I thought it was, I mean, obviously I thought it existed, but I was like, that's not real. How could that? That's awful. That's in another part of the world, not an educated university that's in the top 20 schools in the country, that kind of thing. Very naive. So I have to get her off campus immediately. That's my thought. I got to get her off campus. Also, selfishly, I was like, well, if he finds that she's here and she was naked and he saw me, I don't know what I'm thinking at this point, he's going to kill me too because he's probably a jealous guy. So I called the only person I know who lives off campus. That's my ex-girlfriend that I had a terrible breakup with. I call her at about 4:30 in the morning and I wake her up and I was like, hey, listen, I know you're going to have a lot of questions. I'm very sorry for waking you up, but you know you owe me this. Come and pick me up right now. So she gets in her car at 4:30 in the morning. She gets to us at about 5 in the morning. No one's on the street. I'm in pajamas. This beautiful girl is in my pajamas, and she picks us up. Now, at this point, my ex is furious at me because she thinks that I'm taunting her with this beautiful woman who's wearing my clothes. She's like, I'm just like asking her to pick up me and this like girl I slept with who's incredibly beautiful. And we get in her car and I'm like, just drive. We got to go back to your place. Just drive. I'll explain later. We get back to her place off campus. I tell her to let the girl go to sleep in her bed. And I explain what happened to my ex. And she was like, oh, okay. And then she remembered the girl from being in my room all the time. Like, oh, that's the girl. So Killer Carl really is a domestic abuser. And I was like, yeah, because she had joked about it too. It was just like this running ridiculous joke, this running dark joke we had. Now, I didn't really know what I was going to do the next morning because I had to work the festival, but I also had to deal and help this girl. I mean, this is like a really epic situation. This girl could die, in my opinion. So in the meantime, we're trying to go to sleep. My ex-girlfriend tries to sleep with me. She's like, let's have sex. I want to get back together with you. And I'm like, not now. I can't do this now. Please leave me alone. I have a lot of frustration for her, but I'm also attracted to her. I'm pissed she cheated on me, but I also am very interested in the situation. She's also helping me a lot in the situation. Very confusing emotions. I get maybe 2 hours sleep. In the morning, my ex and I go and get this woman like bagels, coffee, all that stuff. We called some other mutual friends that lived off campus and that I didn't realize had lived off campus, and we got them to agree to let her live in the room because obviously her ex would track her down to her dorm room and find her. We're like, we got to get you off campus immediately. I'll deal with the police. I'll deal with all of it. I'm like, this is someone's life. So we do all that. I tell this girl, she's so thankful. She's like, okay, I'll listen to you. I'm not going to talk to him again. I can't get back with him. This is obviously awful. This is the last straw. And a lot of that day is me, like, almost like in a terrible Benny Hill thing. Like, I'm, like, going from the concert, and then I'm helping this girl. I'm going from the concert, helping this girl. I'm checking in with her. I'm checking in with the concert. All this stuff. Finding ways that I can move her to like, this off-campus place. And, like, trying to deal with all of it. Hoping Killer Carl doesn't come searching for her. Hoping Killer Carl doesn't trace her scent back to my room. That kind of stuff. I'm like, I don't want to deal with this. So it's a very long day. I'm exhausted, but I'm excited that maybe I can help this person. And near the end of that day, later in the afternoon when I had a small break, I went back and I was going to go talk to that girl. And I was like, okay, here's the final plans, as I've been coordinating it all day. And I go to my room first. She lived in the same building, but 4 floors up. So I went to my room first. And what happens right when I step into my room is I see that she is back in Killer Carl's room and they're just hanging out. So in the last few hours, she had decided to go talk to him, and he had convinced her that what had happened was okay, and I gave her the biggest look of death I've ever given anyone. And I felt bad about it, but I was furious. I was like, how can you go back to this person? This person is abusing you. But I couldn't say that. I could just say it with a look, but also I didn't want Killer Carl to see me looking at him or her, because I'm like, he's going to beat the crap out of me and kill me, because now I know some serious shit about him. So, but she sees me and she's clearly upset that I'm upset. She knows that she is fucking up at some point. And this was before I really investigated domestic violence, and I understood the power someone has over you when they abuse you. Like, when they abuse you, there are so many traps. It's like child molestation. Like, it's almost unfixable in a way. It's because they have this mental trap over you that you can't see the hole you're in. And I didn't understand at the time. I was just mad at her. And so later that day, I talked to her and I said, I think you're making a big mistake. I think when I had a moment when she was away from Killer Carl, I'm like, I think you're making an enormous mistake. He's going to kill you at some point. He is abusing you. You can't be in the relationship. And she's like, listen, I know, but he loves me and he made a mistake. And I know it's bad, but I really think he can be better than that. And I was like, I disagree. Please, please, whatever you do, I'm not your dad. I'm not your keeper, but please get out of the situation. This is very dangerous. And she's like, I thank you for your kindness, but I'm going to stay with him for now. Then the year ended, because that was the end of the year. Over the summer, I didn't think much about it. I was like, I thought about it once in a while. I was like, wow, that was a really weird experience. Next year, I went back to school. It was junior year. It was probably the first or second week. I was at a random party at some different dorm. I hadn't thought about it in a while, which makes me sad at this point, thinking that I didn't fully pursue it. But I saw her at a party, and I ran into her. And I didn't know what to do. And she was very, very drunk. And she was very nice to me. And she came up to me and she's like, hey, Jake, I just wanted to let you know that I finally left him over the summer. And it was very hard for me to see that I was in that pattern that I've seen so many other domestic abuse cases be in. You know, you read about it, but when you're in it, it's so hard to realize that it's you. And he had such a power over me. But I finally was able to see that. And we broke up. And I was like, that's so great. I am so proud of you. And she's like, but I do, you know, just to get him back, I do flirt with him once in a while just so he knows what he can't have. And I remember this, like, bubble of anger I felt towards this woman, of how immature this was. And I remember feeling this bubble of anger and realizing there's, like, a Killer Carl in all of us. Like, I wasn't going to hit her or anything, but I felt a lot of anger towards her. I felt a lot of anger towards her. And I was like, oh, okay, every male pretty much has this inside him. And it needs to be checked. And it's a much bigger problem than any of us realize. And yeah, that's the story.
Wow. Okay, so, you know, I mean, this is... How long ago was this?
I would say about 10 years ago.
And so you never kept up with this girl, or have you any idea whatever happened with her?
No idea.
Right. But, you know, it didn't seem like she was looking for help. Even the first night she came to your room, she didn't seem as that distraught.
Well, she just looked like a weak, battered animal. I still remember the moment. I can see it very clearly as I talk to you, the image in my mind of her at that door, just like, oh my God, what a shocking image. It seemed like out of a horror film. I think the reason why she wasn't searching for help is because a lot of domestic abuse victims don't realize they're abuse victims. They just think, oh, well, this is the relationship
and
now it's my fault or whatever it is. They forget, they lose sense of reality so quickly that they don't know they need help.
Yeah, the pattern becomes such that at least it's familiar. I mean, it might not be right, but at least I can count on it,
right.
And I get beat at
it
these times.
It shows that he cares about me.
I know he's going to make up with me and maybe give me presents, and then that is a good period, as it were.
Yeah.
And so did she go to school there?
Yes.
She went to school there as well. Did she not have any family or?
She had I remember we talked about it that night. She had a pretty weird family situation. Like, her family was in Europe. They were hard to contact. Like, this guy was one of the only people she really had as like a rock in the United States.
And how old was he?
I think we were all about 20 years old.
I mean, you're a sophomore, you're 19 years old or whatever. You're much too young to handle this situation.
I mean, I had no idea what to do, which is why, like, when I was frustrated with her for going back with him, I hadn't investigated that problem at all, and I had no idea the power someone has over you when they abuse you. I was like, I was mad at her. Like, not mad, but I was like frustrated with her. I'm like, come on, man. Like, you know this is a bad situation.
So
but I had no idea.
So you're trying to be in control.
Yeah.
And she's trying to be in control, mm-hmm. and it's really everybody's trying to be in control because they fear, like did it seem? It seems to me like you were afraid that she didn't think you were right.
I there probably was part of that. I mean, I was more. I was like, you're going to die if I don't help you. But I do think there probably was a control situation going on with me too. I'm like, listen to me, I can help you with
this. Yeah, you're trying to be the hero,
right?
I mean, here you are, a kid. I mean, what was your major? I'm curious.
English.
Here you are, some English major. Yeah. Are you going to read stories to her and make this go away?
Exactly.
No, but I mean, where you went to school, didn't they have a health care services area where you could report, like, maybe this person needs help, mm-hmm. anonymously, all that sort of thing?
Yeah, we had talked about that, too. But the thing was, I wasn't going to do it without her consent, because I'm not going to do that. Like, that's her choice to make. I can't do that.
But if you're worried about somebody's safety, you'd think you might.
That's why I was trying to get her off campus. But when she went back with him, like, less than 24 hours later, I was like, well, what am I going to do?
And you never heard, I mean, like, in other words, you were young enough that you had been in high school just a couple of years before. They didn't talk, because see, I'm really old, Jake. Let's get that on the table. I'm 67 years old.
I'm 85 years old.
But when I went to high school and stuff, they did not discuss domestic abuse. We had like a sex talk in health class, but we did not discuss domestic abuse. Are you telling me they still did not discuss domestic abuse in your high school in the 90s?
They must have, but I mean, it's not. But when things are theoretical, it doesn't allow you anything for the real world at all. Like you can learn about, like, you learn about sex and health education, but that doesn't tell you anything about what to do when you can't get hard. You know what I mean? I'm saying, like, there's like intricacies to everything that you can't understand until you do it. Like, domestic violence, it's like you can be told A and B and C.
You can't recognize it until you're in the throes of it.
Yeah. I mean, everything is so nuanced.
Right.
Like sex is so nuanced. Domestic violence is so nuanced and messed up that it's hard to recognize things, even if you've been told about them.
Well, just somebody being at your door at 3 a.m. is disarming. That's surprising right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a really crazy. Have you ever had anything like that happen since? I mean, known anybody with domestic abuse problems?
Yes.
Since then?
Yes.
And have you tried to help them?
Yes. I learned, the one I'm thinking of happened, I learned about it after it happened, like probably 3 to 6 months after it happened. And I don't want to speak too detailed the situation, but I tried the person was already out of the situation, mm-hmm. but I also knew the person who had abused her. And I tried very hard to make people aware that this person was an abuser and this person hadn't apologized and still terrorized her in some way. And I tried to make people understand that it existed, but I still don't think there's enough. I think I'm a fairly educated person, and I think I'm a decent human being at least, and I still don't really know what to do in these situations, and I don't think most people don't.
It's interesting. You know what we're going to do right here, Anthony, is we'll take a quick break for 1 second, and we're going to look up a hotline that people are going to be able to call, because I should have done this before, but it's actually a very serious topic. And so if you know somebody, or even think somebody you know, is in a domestic abuse situation, here's the number you should call. Anyway, but it's interesting, Jake, that you bring this story to us here at Storyworthy, because it is a serious topic, and you're a comedian.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, a lot of comics, they do comedy to drown out a lot of bad stuff. You know what I mean? Not all people. And I think it's better to be happy than miserable if you're a comic. But a lot of terrible things happen. And a lot of times you turn to comedy because you want to turn a lot of sorrow to mirth, because you only get one chance at this life. So.
Sorrow to mirth. That should be the name of
From Sorrow to Mirth. That's my one-man show.
Our new podcast, yeah. Sorrow to Mirth.
Yeah.
My lady. Now, listen, you are in this great, I'm going to switch gears. You are in this great sketch group, womencomedy.com. You guys are doing some of the best sketch comedy around. A lot of your sketches are on YouTube. And the people in your group, Pat Bishop, Jake Wiseman, Alan Strickland Williams, and Dave Ross, right?
Yes.
And does everybody write stories?
Yes.
Everybody writes the sketches?
Everyone writes sketches, yes, and everyone acts in them, and Pat Bishop directs them.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
And who's running your camera? And he's also running the camera.
Sometimes we get other people to help us with the camera, depending on how big the idea is. And if, you know, sometimes he can't do both.
And who's editing? Pat as well?
Pat. Yeah.
So it's really his baby.
Pat is the, he's the filmmaker. And then all of us are writers and actors, basically.
Would you like to be a comedy actor, or are you more interested in being a dramatic actor?
Definitely more of a comedy actor.
Right.
Yes. I don't consider myself a dramatic actor. I would like to use comedy as a vehicle to be employed.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, if you want to put totally me in a drama, not. Fantastic. I would love to be able to pay rent by not being an assistant
somewhere.
Well,
there's plenty of people in Los Angeles working in show business that are not stars, and they're not famous, and they don't even have a show every week, but somehow they get by.
Yeah.
So you can do that, can't you?
Yeah, I don't want to just get by. If I'm being honest, I want to way more than get by, but I would also be totally fine with getting by if I could do it.
But do you
comedy.
Have an alternative? Otherwise, if I don't make it, then I'm going back to...
No way. No way.
Where did you come from?
I came from New York.
From New York, right. Yeah. And you're not going back.
No, I don't like New York that much.
So this is your life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in order to make it, although that term is weird, you probably shouldn't use it, because what is making it? But
there is no making
right.
it. It is just getting by.
Right.
And it's being happy every
sure.
day, because you don't know when you're going to get sick or ill or
yeah.
have to go back
I
for an emergency.
I could step out of this place and get hit
oh,
by a car.
Oh, don't say that.
No, but it's actually, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's really good to be aware of every second. I've been talking about this in therapy, like little stuff like, and I'm not a hippie, but little stuff like feeling the air on your skin and being thankful for that feeling. Like little things like that.
With that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a hit from our E-Pen right now. I have a fine sativa in here. It's a little silver super haze. And Jake Wiseman, my guest, ladies and gentlemen, is wearing a t-shirt with three kittens on it. Not one, not two, but three kittens. One is playing the piano. One is staring out at the moon. And it's really everything you could ever want in a t-shirt.
And more.
It reminds me a little of the Three Wolf t-shirt. Remember the Wolf t-shirt?
Oh, yeah.
And it's a little reminiscent of that, but it has more kitty to it.
I'm all about cats.
How many cats do you have?
I have two cats.
I have one cat.
Well, you should get another.
Oh, that's right. You have Shitska and Pebbles.
Shitska and Pebbles, yeah.
Right, and I have Sophie.
Sophie's a good name.
I have Ewok.
Oh,
Ewok
that's
is
right.
also
okay.
a good name.
Anthony Bench,
She's
Ewok.
An indoor cat.
I have two indoor cats as well.
And my cat is indoor. I think in California, it's best to keep your
Well, there's
your
coyotes.
There's a lot of coyotes.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
just of some. Oh, I see.
Oh, I am not that nerdy, but it's not an insult. I was actually gonna say, like, you know, as a kid, you know, they make fun of you for not liking sports. Well, as an adult, they make fun of you for not knowing anything about Star Wars. And I'm just my father just raised me listening to, like, watching sports and playing sports. So I know nothing about comic books or anything, although I desperately want to be cool in that way.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different, you know, talk about being nuanced. I mean, there's people that are heavy into bands. Then there's the people into the comic books. So there's all these different creative outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't be involved in everything, Jake Wiseman.
But I want to.
I know. But Jake, look, what happened to the Morning After podcast?
Well, I did it with Eli Olsberg. And just to explain what it is, we interviewed people in the porn industry. And we'd have comic guests on. And it was very feminist, sex positive. It was the opposite of Howard Stern. That was our goal. Because Howard Stern, you know, good guy, whatever. But I don't like the way he talks about sex. I think it's really base and awful. But we wanted to sort of hear people's emotions and stories about porn, because I think that's interesting. Like, I grew up watching it all the time, and everyone watches it.
So what did you take from that? You did the show for 1 year.
More than 1 year.
More than, and how can you sum up kind of what you learned from people in the porn industry?
It's hard to sum it up, but I would say that it's way more complex than people think it is, and they should consider that these people are people and have reasons for doing what they do beyond what you might initially think. And the reason why it ended, to answer your first question, was we just felt like we ran its course. We did 70-something episodes, and it's like, I think we accomplished what we wanted to accomplish, and I want to try new projects.
Yeah. In other words, there's only so many ways you can go at porn, as it were.
I think so. And I think, you know, it could have gone further, but it's like, I think you should retire at the top of your game.
Do you like porn?
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
So in that respect, you were able to, when you had your
continue
guests on,
my love.
You could say to your guests, like, well, I saw you in this picture.
I think, that's an interesting thing because, yeah, I'm still friendly with a bunch of people that I met on the podcast.
But how do you compliment them? Like, I really believed when you were blowing that guy.
Well, it's like this. Well, first of all, that is a very underrated talent.
You don't even know who you're talking to.
No, what I'm saying is if I perform comedy, right, and someone compliments me on my jokes, and they're saying, like, great job, you really made me laugh. That's like saying to someone who does porn, like, you were great in that scene and it was awesome to watch.
Right.
It's not like embarrassing. Like, people look at sex as embarrassing and, like, their naked body's embarrassing. And we're just taught so poorly in this country, and we're taught to shame sex, and it can be a beautiful, very helpful thing. And masturbating is wonderful for a lot of people. And so these people help that,
but
they're heroes.
But what does this have to do with – and they're heroes. Okay.
I think so.
But what does this have to do with giving a good blowjob? In other words, I don't want to get crass about it, but, like, I've never had any complaints. I've never heard a guy say, no, you're doing it all wrong.
But what do you mean?
Well, what makes it good or not good? I mean, to most men, it's pretty much all good.
No, that's not true.
Interesting.
That is not true. A lot of them are wonderful. I mean, anyone who's willing to do that is a really great person. But I also think that, there's definitely better things you can do. Like, if you're having sex, I mean, to get crass, because I like getting crass, is I think crassness is underrated because it's more honest. If you're having sex with people, assuming you've had multiple partners in your life, some people are definitely better at it. And so it's just that. It's like if you play baseball, one person's going to be better than the other. They might have different ways. Some of them might be fairly equivalent,
well,
but they have different styles.
Even to the extent of kissing. I mean, there's good kissers and bad kissers.
And so when you watch people and they're like really doing something, they're really committing to it. It's like it's more just like commitment. It's like when I go,
I think I need to watch more porn.
You probably should. There's great stuff out there.
I bet there is.
It's just commitment to – it's like – A lot of my friends, men that watch porn, what they are looking for is people who are super into it. And then when I watch comedy, it's people who really commit to performing that I love. I like commitment in general. That excites me. It's a fantasy. Commitment is a fantasy.
So maybe instead of stand-up comedy, we have like a laying flat comedy kind of a thing. And we do stand-up while having sex.
That is what a lot of sex is, because I'm not – when I think of myself, like, I have body hair and I'm like disgusting. So I think that – you like, if I'm having sex, I can't be entirely serious, because I'm like, I can't believe you let me do this to you.
Yeah, it's more fun to laugh, for sure.
Yeah, it's like a fun experience. Like, it's like a relaxing time. It's like
it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be. I mean, it can be intense, but you should be able to throw a joke in there. I mean, think about what you're doing. You're putting your biological piece into another biological piece, either for the point of procreation or to make you feel good. The fact that we're on Earth is insane. The fact that we've evolved to be this kind of mammal is hilarious. And this is how we pleasure each other. I put my part inside your part. That is crazy.
I think
humans,
Jake,
put parts inside each other.
Like, yeah, you should be like around in the late 60s, early 70s.
I definitely should have been around that time.
More of a free love kind of a time.
And it sucks because I think, you know, I'm hyper nervous about STDs and all that stuff. And of course. I mean, everyone in our generation is terrified of it because that's all we're taught. It's taught like it's taught to us like it's like this plague that's going on. And
that doesn't concern me that much. Maybe because I'm kind of particular who I'm intimate with, first of all.
But, for instance, like you could sleep with someone who doesn't tell you that they have herpes,
right?
And if it's no fault of yours, you could wear a condom and you could still get it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like you're a decent person or whatever it is. And then you now have this thing that you can never get rid of, even though it wasn't your fault. Someone lied to you or you got it anyway. So I think that the way sex and STDs are talked about is very fear-based in this country, and it shouldn't be. It should be more European. I mean, there's some things we do right, but it's just a shame that there's this thing that
in
we can
words,
enjoy.
It should be more like, hey, just so you know, I have herpes. I don't think you're going to get it, but I need you to know that.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Well, but also it should be like how we talk about drugs. It's like we should not be – or how we should talk about drugs. We should talk about drugs in a way that's like – just do some of these sometimes. Avoid those.
Right.
Don't be an idiot about it.
Right.
Drugs are a wonderful experience. They help a lot of people, and they're talked about like, you will ruin your life. It's like, they'll also help your life, and
right.
everyone who's artistic
of
is pretty
course.
Much done
and
drugs.
And also, you know, when they talk about people being altered in an altered state, well, you're also in an altered state when you take aspirin, because you're supposed to have that headache, aren't you?
You're in an altered, yeah.
You took aspirin to alter it. So it's the same as having a glass of wine or smoking
yeah.
a joint.
It's
you might be altering, but you're altering all day long. You have a cup of coffee to wake up.
We have this bizarre...
You altered yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, you also alter yourself by going to a terrible day job and wanting to kill yourself because you're there. You know what I mean? Like, everything's an altered state. It's just people, we have this like weird sort of coming down. It's like a weird messed up Christian logic we have to this country that doesn't apply to real life. That it takes a while to break out of that cult of child rearing.
It's changing, though, don't you think? The times are changing.
Absolutely.
They
yeah,
really are.
Of course.
I think things are getting better
well,
onward.
You know, legalization of a lot of things is great.
Is really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, do you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yeah.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
The topic is wild card. I used to work at a chandelier store, and it was a very hotsy-totsy place. I was an assistant there. A lot of famous people would come in, and one day David LaChapelle came in, the famous photographer, clearly high out of his mind. That's the first thing you notice is he's just high as absolute high shit. Anyway, so he was just like, oh, what's all this stuff? And I'm like, it's like chandeliers and stuff. And he's like, oh, really cool, really cool. And he just, and this is a rich person, so he just goes around pointing at stuff. He's like, I want that, I want that, I want that, I want that. And he's clearly high out of his mind. And he bought like a lot of stuff, like thousands and thousands of dollars. And I realized that that's a huge difference between like poor people and rich people. When you're poor and you get high, you go to McDonald's. But when you're high, you go to a chandelier store and you buy chandeliers and then you eat the chandeliers. Like, that's what it's like to be a rich person. You just eat really fancy stuff because food isn't enough for you.
Well, it is true. I mean, how many chandeliers do you need? It's a very specific lighting fixture.
It very much is. And, you know, you pretty much – the thing about chandeliers, you buy like one a lifetime.
That being said, I think that sounds like one of the funnest goddamn things in the world. Get stoned and go look at chandeliers.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, getting stoned and – going to anywhere where there's nice things and
being
able to point and get stuff.
And what's so funny about chandeliers is they as you know, you're the employee here, Jake, but they lower the chandeliers such that you can like walk around them. They're at your height. They're not up in the sky, are they?
Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, Christine.
Interesting. Because, yeah, how many chandeliers do you need?
I need 1,000 to fall asleep, but I'm weird.
I have one chandelier and it's in storage, but this lady I knew, like a friend of a friend, her mother, and she's going through this garage and she says, Christine, I don't know why, but this chandelier made me think of you. She gives me the chandelier, right? I fucking take it to George's Lighting on Hollywood Boulevard and I get it fixed for $140. I have nowhere to put this chandelier, but I have one. And
sell
it's
it.
In storage.
Sell it on eBay.
It's a great idea, isn't
yeah.
it?
Make
I think
some
I
money.
Might do that.
Make some money.
Jake Wiseman. Mm. There's a reason why you were here today.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, one more thing before we go. I want to talk about your blog, Jake Wiseman, yay, at .tumblr.com. Do you update that recently, or what do you
mm-hmm.
do with that?
Yeah, I make a lot of sketches. Sometimes I write weird comedic pieces, and I act in a lot of videos, and I'm on a lot of podcasts, and I just put everything that I'm doing on there.
I think that's a great way. It's like a nice
yeah.
platform, and you
right.
have that. And then it's like, this: what do I do? This is what I do. You want to see it?
Yeah.
Don't make me explain
this. It's like
this.
A resume,
just look
kind
at
of.
It.
It's a creative resume.
It is like a creative resume. I like those words.
Yeah.
And on Twitter, at WisemanJake.
Yes.
And you enjoy the Twitter.
Love Twitter.
So do I.
It's great.
I think it is,
it's
too.
It's free entertainment. It's great. It eliminates so many things. It allows you so many opportunities that you never used to have for
exactly.
various things.
Now, here's like some of the things I love to follow on Twitter. I love following Neil Young lyrics. You know why? I love Neil Young.
There you go.
And I don't mind just hearing those lyrics or just seeing them a couple of times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing that. I love looking some of the weather, you know, one of the weather Twitter things about what's going on in the country. I love World Facts. I love that. That one.
I like the pictures in world history.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good
history.
One. You're like, wow, this is cool.
It's
like nice in the middle
things.
Of the day when you're working just to be like, that is what the first
Mia
World Fair
Farrell
looked like.
Mia Farrell has a great Twitter site.
Yeah, she's
I like
cool.
following her.
I hate saying this, but she retweeted me once. Oh. She doesn't follow me. Someone else retweeted me and she retweeted me, and I felt like a part of me was complete.
Wow.
Just
that
because
was big.
She,
what
I grew
was
up watching her. It was, imagine if after all they've put us through, Brad and Jen got back together. I was just thinking the world would
tweet.
Explode. The world
yes.
would explode if that happened.
I
hate to say that I was retweeted by this person, but growing up watching her and being so enamored by how incredible a woman she is for so many reasons, I was like, the world is connected, bro.
Mia you know Farrow, what I mean? That's yeah. right. You heard it from her first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy Twitter too.
Good.
I enjoy the conciseness of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting. Anything that can change the world is looked at as bad immediately, but is always good. I think it's always interesting.
Change is hard, but it usually is for the best.
Yes.
I agree. Well, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
We sure do appreciate it. And again, folks, you can find him on Twitter at WiseManJake. And on behalf of everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and Sean Merrick, and of course, John Thomas Griffith, you know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me. And behalf of Hannes Finney, gosh, Hannes, we miss you. Wish you were here. We'll see you next week. And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Jake Wiseman, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story-Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.